Welcome, SGO listeners. This is a continuation of our podcast series brought to you by the SGO Task Force on assisting members in preparing for the oral boards and the certification process. My name is Scott Richard, and I'm a gynecologic oncologist in Pennsylvania. I'm honored to be the co-chair of this task force with Tracy Lynn Hall. This is our sixth and final podcast in the series. We'll be focusing on cervix and vulvar cancer today. I'm joined by two of my colleagues.
Thanks for having me, Scott. I'm Yasmin Lyons, and I'm a GYN oncologist here in San Antonio, Texas.
And I'm Lisa Rao. I'm a GYN oncologist with the Cleveland Clinic.
Our five previous podcasts are currently available on the SGO Go and other podcast platforms. And if you haven't already, I would invite you to listen to these podcasts. They're all filled with useful information as you prepare for the boards. We have one on caseless preparation, another on radiation oncology, a third on ICU management, and two disease-specific podcasts, the first on ovarian and genetics, and this most recent podcast on endometrial cancer. It's hard to believe that the annual meeting is just a few weeks away, and I'm excited to announce that we have partnered with ABOG to provide live sessions in Tampa. On Friday, we will have a representative from ABOG that will provide information on logistics for the exam and help understand how this exam is scored. Additionally, they will avail themselves to a question and answer session, help demystify this process. Then on Saturday, Sunday, and Monday morning, we will have sessions where high-yield topics, hypothetical questions, and other information can be discussed in a small group format with task force members. Registration for the meeting is open. And if you haven't already, I would invite you to register as soon as you can and look for these sessions so that you can help plan your meeting accordingly. As I mentioned earlier, today we'll be focusing on cervix and vulvar cancer. I would like to ask you, Lisa, what can candidates expect to be tested on during the section of the oral boards?
You'll be tested on, of course, your knowledge of the diagnosis, treatment and management of cervix and vulvar cancer, but also on the specifics of radiation as it pertains to the management of these two diseases as well.
Yes, and what about you? Any things that you want to add to what would be tested on during this section of the oral boards?
I agree with what Lisa said and just wanted to give a plug for the excellent radiation oncology podcast that's already been published that has a good review of high-yield topics and guidance on resources for studying.
Lisa, when preparing for the oral boards, what are some of the high-yield cervical cancer topics that a person could look at?
I would say the most important is going to be your own case list. So like all areas, you should know this really extremely well. So one thing you can do when reviewing your case list is to meet with your local radiation oncologist. This is excellent as a way to review both general guidelines for radiation as well as the specific treatment plans that were made for your patients. It will help clarify any treatment decisions that were made and help you think through and understand how side effects are managed for those patients. I think another thing to keep in mind is to understand the method of brachytherapy boost used at your institution. And again, having that conversation with a radiation oncologist can be really illuminating. Something else to consider is understanding which patients required adjuvant therapy after surgery based on Sedlis and Peters criteria, and be able to explain your decision to operate on those patients first. Something else to consider on your case list is to understand your decision to perform or not perform a lymph node dissection in locally advanced cervical cancer patients if you're trying to determine the extent of radiation field. I think that practice can vary from institution to institution and patient to patient. Just again, understanding your case list, your patients, and just to really explain that clearly to an examiner. In addition, understand your decision to perform sentinel or full lymph node dissections for your early stage cervix cancers that undergo radical hysterectomy.
Lisa, an interesting thing you kind of mentioned there when you talked about your institution. So do you think a candidate, it's necessary to understand the rationale for every option available? Or like for the purposes of your oral boards, should you just kind of focus on what you do or what your institution does?
I think both are important. But I do think, again, there is geographic and institutional variation because there is some variation in how we understand and interpret these guidelines. So just having a clear understanding of your training, your institutional guidelines, and really just being able to back that up with sound and reasonable data is going to serve you well. As long as, of course, understanding how that fits into national guidelines that are available to all of us as GYN oncologists.
I think that's a great point. One thing I also kind of want to talk about, Lisa, if you don't mind, is for the purposes of a candidate who's sitting for the oral boards, is there anything that they need to know specifically about surgical procedures when it comes to cervical cancer?
That's a great question. I definitely think, especially because some of these surgeries, they're becoming more rare, but really understanding the steps of both modified and a radical hysterectomy, as well as exenative procedures as they relate to cervical cancer. So definitely going to your textbooks. And then I would actually practice dictating these surgeries, both sort of on paper and out loud. So you can really internalize those steps and really understand them. Because again, I think for a lot of us, we're not seeing, you know, huge volumes of these surgeries unless you're, you know, at a very high volume center.
In terms of clinical trials that a candidate needs to be able to recite for the purpose of the oral boards, if an examiner asks you a question about cervical cancer, what are some of the clinical trials and landmark studies you think that we should look at?
It's a great question. So a couple that come to mind, and of course, this may not be completely inclusive of everything, but sort of hearkening back to the earliest things, we think about the Landoni paper from 1997. So where we draw a rationale for considering radical hysterectomy versus radiation for early stage cervix patients, GOG 92 and GOG 109. So understanding which patients we need to consider adjuvant therapy for after radical hysterectomy. Of course, the LAC trial is super important in understanding that data and how it practice changing for our GYN oncology community. Some other, I think maybe not as landmark papers, but I think something important to understand where the field may be going is kind of this group of papers that looks at the rate of having perimetrial involvement based on certain tumor factors. So Coven's paper from 2002, the Wright paper from 2007, and the Frommowitz paper from 2009, sort of a collective that looked at that particular question. And then of course, you've got your classic papers that sort of all published simultaneously about the role of concurrent chemotherapy with radiation. So RTG GOG 9001, GOG 85, GOG 120, and GOG 123. Obviously, the collective of which is super important and was very practice changing and just really internalizing that information. And then when we think about more advanced recurrent or metastatic disease, so GOG 169, GOG 204, GOG 240, JCOG 0505, and then more contemporarily, Keynote 826 and 158, and then the ANOVA trial would be papers I think really important to sort of understand because they've driven our practice forward.
I think that those are some excellent papers to point out and really kind of practice delineating papers and important things to know if you're a candidate for the boards. I think candidates really nowadays, particularly coming down to a few months before the boards, are there any high yield resources that you would point out to somebody who, if they asked you, Lisa, what can I look at to kind of maximize my educational efforts in these last few months?
These are things that I personally used, and I was fortunate enough to be in a study group, so I know that a lot of other people benefited from them. So first, just looking internally at the SGO, the Connect Ed portion of the SGO website has fantastic review material. There's a Fellows Core GYN Oncology lecture series, cervix cancer, and particularly lectures covering adjuvant therapy, chemoradiation, for locally advanced disease, chemotherapy for our advanced and recurrent patients, rare cervical tumors, oncofertility, because these patients do tend to be, some of them are very young. And they also have excellent surgical videos for radical hysterectomy and trachelectomy. I will note that they are, the videos, at least that I found, were a minimally invasive approach, but they do offer a narrated step-by-step procedure. They're clear and I just think really helpful, both for practice and for studying. And the links to surgical videos, if you're not familiar with the SGO Connect Ed website, can be found in the content library under the surgical education.
What about the GYEDU website? Did you utilize that at all for your study purposes?
Absolutely. I spent a lot of time on the GYOEDU website. And I think, fortunately, it's back up and running. So excellent resources prepared by experts in our field. So pertaining particularly to cervical cancer, they have lectures on early stage cervical cancer, both in the advanced stage and recurrent setting, radical hysterectomy, the discussion about open versus minimally invasive approach, fertility preservation in cervix cancer, an excellent lecture on endocervical cancer classification, and a lecture on small cell carcinoma of the cervix. I do want to note that most of these lectures, I think, are about 1 to 2 years old. So anything that's going to have been recently published will not be included in those lectures. But nonetheless, they are excellent, comprehensive, and I think really engaging.
For a more contemporary kind of evaluation of treatment options for patients, what would you recommend that we look at?
Absolutely. I mean, you can always, your NCCN guidelines are going to be very up to date for you. I think especially in cervix, we've seen a lot of new approvals and new therapies in the last few years, which is exciting. I mean, the NCCN is going to be an excellent resource to understand those recent approvals, what patients they're going to apply for, and also can direct you back to the publications that drove those changes. So always a great fallback.
And what are some other resources you utilized when it came to studying for this portion of the boards?
Absolutely. So I think I've mentioned this a few times. I felt like my study group was a lifeline. So if you're in one or can join one, I absolutely recommend this, even if maybe you're someone who tends to study sort of more on their own. It's a truly excellent resource. So it's great. Depending on how your study group works, you can divide up topical reviews to take some of that sort of time intensive, onerous work off of you as an individual. It also can serve as an ad hoc tumor board. So you can review your own cases. We did this a lot as the boards approached. So you can practice sort of talking through your approach and then understand different perspectives on treatment. Because the nice thing about a study group is you're probably going to meet up with people who train in various, you know, in various institutions and may approach or think about things in a slightly different way. Another resource, which I think I already alluded to, was your local radiation oncologist. Meeting with your local radiation oncologist to discuss just radiation in general, but also specifically your individual patients and how they were managed, I personally found invaluable and really made me feel like I was more prepared for that section. And the other thing that I actually still keep in my bag is that synopsis in key gynecologic oncology trials. It's a great resource to review key historical trials. And it also provides the full citations to locate the original paper, which can be tricky sometimes. And it's just a nice kind of go-to reference so you don't have to shuffle through or kind of open up your computer every time you're looking for a resource.
I think that those are all amazing resources and definitely things that our candidates should hopefully look at. Yasmin, one of the things that I always kind of worried about was how much time should I spend on a relatively rare cancer that some GYN oncologists may not run into on a day-to-day basis? So when it comes to vulvar cancer, what are some of the high-yield topics you looked at to prepare yourself for the boards?
I think you're exactly right, Scott. Vulvar cancer is rare. And so I would really recommend that you focus on your case list. And what I would say is because we're coming out of fellowship not having done a lot of these more radical surgeries, I would consider meeting with your more senior partners to talk through these cases. The more that you're able to verbalize what you did, why you did, the more comfortable you're going to feel on exam day. And I really recommend that people talk to themselves, talk to their kids, dogs, partners, just be more comfortable verbalizing everything.
Any landmark trials that you would look at to prepare for the boards?
Yes, definitely a lot of landmark trials for vulvar cancer, specifically GOG 36. I would focus on for the prognostic factors, one of the biggest studies that gave us a lot of our information about what types of surgeries do people need, you know, dissection, who needs surgery for early stage vulvar cancer.
One of the things I think I always kind of struggled with when I was a young attending was who to give neoadjuvant treatment to versus who to do primary surgical resection on. Anything you would recommend for a candidate that's struggling with that also for their boards?
Again, I would say senior partners are always helpful. Tumor boards are helpful in those situations. And I think going back to those early trials, those early landmark trials can also help with that. I found that another good resource, again, is the GYOEDU website that Lisa referred to.
Practices are changing definitely when it comes to how we evaluate lymphatic involvement for vulvar cancer. What recommendations could you give a candidate if they were to ask you, Yasmin, what can I do or what should I look at when it comes to lymphatic evaluation for vulvar cancers?
I would say definitely no sentinel lymph nodes. That's going to be what most of us are doing nowadays as long as your patient's a candidate for it. And so within that, no, GOG 173, no, the groin studies, and no laterality. How does that affect your surgical plan? There's a great paper by Dr. Coleman using data from GOG 173 that focuses on laterality in the case of sentinel lymph nodes.
When Lisa was talking earlier, she talked about surgical steps for cervical cancer. Would you make recommendations when it comes to vulvar cancer surgeries that we need to be prepared to discuss?
Yes, I would say knowing the surgical steps for a full inguinofemoral lymph node dissection is going to be key. Knowing the anatomy in this area and practicing dictating that is going to be a big part of studying for this section of the boards.
I think that that's really potential landmine a lot of people can get into, particularly with sentinel lymph nodes becoming the standard of care. If you don't know your landmarks, your historical landmarks, that's potentially something that could really kind of hook you up during the boards. I think that's a great point, Yasmin, and thanks. What are other topics that we should be prepared to discuss when it comes to vulvar cancer, if you can name a few?
I thought that looking at how imaging affects our workup is important, and specifically knowing the specificity and the sensitivity of our preoperative imaging, because that drives, you know, what kind of lymph node evaluation you're going to do. So knowing the specificity and sensitivity of PET versus CT scan versus MRI.
How important it is to know the new surgical or staging guidelines?
Yes, I would say, especially knowing that definition for how we're calculating depth of invasion now is important, as well as the new updated 2021 FIGO staging.
Obviously, the Again, these are very rare tumors that we kind of encounter. Would you say that there's anything that a candidate should look at when it comes to management of patients during the perioperative period for vulvar cancer?
Yes, I would say knowing not only how to do the full vulvoid dissection as far as the steps goes, but also knowing the complications and then how you can minimize those complications is going to be really important. Specifically reviewing GOG 195, where they tried to minimize complications with different interventions, is a very helpful paper.
What about when it comes to evaluating for margin status, neoadjuvant chemotherapy, systemic disease, anything you would recommend for those?
Yes, I think margins is a hot topic for vulvar cancer, and we have our classic papers like the Heaps paper and then Chan. But there's also newer papers such as the Grudenhaus paper that looks at whether or not there's dysplasia versus lichen sclerosis at the margins and how that plays a role in recurrence. As far as neoadjuvant chemotherapy goes, I know that we have a variety of different regimens. So going back to NCCN, as well as some of the chemotherapy papers are going to be helpful. And then I used NCCN a lot for kind of the more rare parts of vulvar cancer, like somebody who presents with upfront metastatic disease, to see the indicated systemic therapy for that.
Yes, and one last thing. Help me determine what I need to look at when it comes to vulvar melanoma. Anything specifically that I should look at if I'm preparing for my boards?
So since vulvar melanoma is so rare for us, what I would recommend, especially if you have one of these on your case list, is talking to your medical oncologist, specifically because we know that they're staged differently. The surgery is going to be different for them than it is for GYN vulvar cancer. And so that's what I recommend, is if you have one on your case list, go ahead and talk to your medical oncologist to get their opinion.
And when it comes to, again, our limited time to study overall for the boards while we're trying to be in a clinical practice with a very rare tumor, what are some of the high yield resources you utilized when it came to studying for vulvar cancer?
When I was studying for boards, I thought NCCN was a great guideline. And even now out in practice, I frequently go to it for vulvar cancer just because it's not that common. Specifically at the very end, there's a principles of radiation section that I found helpful because that gives you not only the dosing regimens, but also other health information related to radiation that might show up on the oral boards.
Any recommendations about landmark articles that we should read?
Yes. I would say you're probably not going to have time to reread every single GOG study on vulvar cancer before taking boards, but knowing the inclusion criteria, the basic methods, and then the summary of all of the important trials is really key.
Lisa talked about study groups earlier in our podcast, and it sounds like it's a great resource to utilize. If you were going to spend time with your study group on vulvar cancer, what would you do?
So I was fortunate enough to be in the same study group as Lisa for oral boards, and I thought it was a great way to study. I went and gave our vulvar cancer lecture, so I gathered all the information presented to the group and then used that presentation afterwards to study, supplemented by the key landmark articles, the dictations for a full groin dissection, and talking to my radiation oncologist.
Any textbooks that you utilized when it came to studying?
Yes. I thought Morrow's Gynecologic Cancer Surgery, the Blue Book, was an excellent resource for this. Great pictures, great anatomy figures, and just the vulvar cancer in particular, I thought was very helpful.
Great. And finally, immunotherapy and vulvar cancer. Anything that the candidates should be prepared to discuss?
Yes, I think that's fair game. We're extrapolating some data from cervix, so I would know that, but also Keynote 158, what are the implications of using immunotherapy? What's the utility of it? And there is a case series from 2021 out of MD Anderson by Howe that takes a look at their use of immunotherapy in vulvar cancer, which I thought was helpful.
Lisa, Yasmin, this is amazing. I think these are two topics that particularly are very stressful for a lot of people, if nothing else, because of the rarity that we have and the complexity and the history. So I think it was amazing. And I really appreciate you taking time to discuss these with me today. I also want to thank the listeners for taking time to listen to this podcast and your interest in what we've put out from the SGO Task Force with this series. We look forward to seeing you at the SGO annual meeting, March 25th to 28th in beautiful Tampa, Florida, and hope you're able to attend our sessions. On behalf of the SGO Task Force on oral board preparation, I want to wish you good luck with your studying and safe travels to Tampa.
The information presented is that of the contributing faculty and presenters and does not necessarily represent the views of the Society of Gynecologic Oncology or any named company or organization providing financial support. Specific therapies discussed may not be approved and/or specified for use as indicated by the faculty or presenters. If you like what you heard today, please let us know by leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and hitting the follow button wherever you're listening. If you have suggestions for future SGO On The Go podcasts, please email us directly at education@sgo.org.